you have to come back and retrofit. That's not as economic. So my hope is that the company, my belief would be that with this language, the company would be preparing for that technology and getting the towers ready for it or using whatever equipment is available today to prepare for this.
That's a really good point. And my recollection from one of the discussions on this technology was that for the most part, the kind of, for lack of a better term, off-the-shelf lighting systems now have this capability. And it's a matter of, you know, the FAA approval and then adding the radar system. And so unless you almost would go out of your way to buy some old stuff sitting around that is not capable of performing this way, I think it's almost a standard. And so as long as they get that kind of equipment and that the cost was essentially very similar, and so as long as they make the initial preparations, I think when FAA approves it, it should be ready to go. And certainly it sounds like it will be commercially reasonable based on the previous discussions.
Zach, would there be the one difference I feel on this issue, on this project versus the others, is the other Brady Wind projects, the company was very open to this and agreeable, and this doesn't feel quite the same. And so I wonder if we could include some language on that would require the company provide updates on what they're hearing or finding along the way about this technology, so it isn't just like, you know, when it's ready to operate, we hear, oh, wasn't commercially reasonable, too late type of thing. I don't know exactly what that would look like, and I'm not looking for a bunch of onerous hurdles, but just keep us up to date on what you're finding out about this as it relates to this project.
Yeah, I think something like that could be included in the order. I will visit with the company, and we can, Julie Prescott and I can work on what would perhaps be reasonable. And I'm just throwing this out there. I mean, if it's quarterly or something like that, an update as to what's happening with this type of system. Yeah. And I'm just throwing out that timeline. I don't know if that would be appropriate or not, but we'll give that some thought. And
you know, even in 6 months or whatever is the trigger when they find something out from in terms of the equipment available and how it works in this project and FAA, those seem to be the two biggest issues as it relates to this project. So, otherwise, I'm interested in Commissioner Christman's additional thoughts.
Okay, so that was one of them. And my understanding from reading this, I just wanted Zach or Julie's opinion, the Barnes County approval is all finalized now, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. That was all they needed was that conditional use permit?
Right, that was docket entry 82, and they filed that. November 2nd.
So I have that. There's nothing else that we were waiting for from Barnes.
No, there wasn't. And as I understand it, it was essentially it's probably not the right word, but renewal of, they had one, and then apparently they were told that they needed to essentially reapply would be the right word, but they do have the required zoning permits from the county for this project.
Does any of that interplay on easements tie back to what the county did, or
No, it doesn't, Commissioner Kolk. The easements are going to be strictly private matters between a landowner and the company.
So what does the county conditional permit actually approve then?
It approves the ability for the use of that property for a wind turbine. So the zoning code in Barnes County would have a requirement for uses of its land throughout the county. One of the uses is presumably turbines. They have to follow those requirements in the zoning code to receive a conditional use permit. So it's not otherwise permitted in that area, only with a conditional use.
And they have no county setbacks or anything like we've seen in some of the others?
They do, and those have been met here.
Some waiver in there, wasn't there? that was addressed in there.
So the county is not tied into an exact footprint that we're looking at for a project area?
We're looking at the project area. This is the county. Apparently, and Julie Prescott reminded me here that there is some variances that have been requested, but those are from the county requirements, which are not the same as our requirements. Our requirements are what they are, and the county's requirements are what they are. So the company has received that through the process provided by the county and has received those.
But does the county permit say, okay, this is the layout that you can put these turbines in, or are they, you know, for power lines, I understand it much, it's a little easier. For a gas plant, it's a little easier, but for a wind farm, so does it say that the company can put a wind farm anywhere in the county, or does it?
Not specific as ours, but they do contain the township and the legal descriptions in the permit here. It is listed. So the permit, the conditional use permit provides some specificity, but it's not down to the specific that we have on our map that was provided to us.
So how do we, just to be a super anal here, but to make sure that everything they've approved is, how do I explain this a different way? If you took that footprint and laid it over the top of this,
yeah,
would there be anything that we're looking at that is outside of what they've approved?
I don't believe so, but we could double check. I mean, they provide all of the legal descriptions. We'd have to go through all the legal descriptions. I don't know if there's a map. There's not a map in the exhibit they provided. They may have a map. I don't know if they provided one to the county or not. I can check on that, though, Commissioner.
Hey, Randy, I kind of derailed your question. Sorry about that. What else did you have?
Well, and this isn't really an issue for me as far as approving this or not. It's more of an observation because I don't know if we want to in the future take this into consideration on rules, but in other counties, haven't they had their setbacks from their rights of way instead of from the center line? I found it interesting. They've got a 1.25 times the height of the turbine from the center line of their roads. If they ever have to upgrade one of those roads, they're going to be tight to add additional, you know, other than the normal 33 feet for a widened road and have it in there at a safe distance. Is that different than other counties do? Do you recall?
Quite frankly, I think it's up to each individual county. I think that it probably is. But Barnes County has determined that that's acceptable to them. Okay. I mean, there was a hearing on it. It was all the process, all the procedure was followed, and I know you're not second guessing it, Commissioner, but it's not our area either. So
yeah. Just an observation.
Right.
So the last thing before more maybe of a general discussion, the last probably point. When we did Brady 1 and 2, and I think Oliver 3, but I guess I just remember the discussion more revolving around Brady. There were a number of neighbors in there that were wanting, like, the setback instead of concerning residences to be from property lines. And as I recall, they even shifted some of them, trying to get a 1,000-foot setback from non-participating property lines, and ended up, there was just, like, one or two that they couldn't, and it was, you know, almost 1,000 feet anyway. And I noticed in here that in Exhibit 33, number 86, all they're committing to is a 541-foot setback from property lines of non-participants. You know, that pretty well excludes that non-participant from developing much of anything on the edges of their property in the future.
That's our distance, the 541 feet. 1.1 times the tip of height from the property line of non-participating landowners.
That's our rule?
Must be. Yeah, per the commission's exclusion areas. I don't know if it's in rule or where that
that's
is. It must
rule.
Be.
That's one I think we need to work on adjusting. But. Okay, those were the details.
I have one more before you go into kind of the general issue.
Okay.
I think we won't want to come back to this, but on late filed exhibit, well, it's exhibit 86 or it's docket number 86, exhibit 33. If I just could get your understanding on what's going on with turbine 37, it says here that Glacier Ridge is currently pursuing a participation agreement with this landowner. Is that the landowner to the north of that, where 38 is?
Right, and they now have an easement for 38. So I emailed the company last night asking them about this, Commissioner. And
okay.
The response is, unfortunately, the parcel above T37 is separate from the parcel executed for T38. So they don't have that issue resolved yet either, and I suppose
so
that's another issue. Two parcels there. T37 remains close to that landowner boundary, and the status relatively unchanged. Glacier has listed that parcel as pending, is confident it will be assigned, and doesn't believe they'll have to move the turbine. If for some reason the parcel above T37 is not signed, Glacier is certainly willing to adjust or remove the turbine.
And so 38 is taken care of, and that includes the collector line, too? Is that property that collector line is on?
I don't know that 100%. I believe so, but I will follow up on that.
Okay. So if I could just, so we've got the, just summarize the outstanding issues. We've got 38 and that potential collector line there.
Right.
What
T37, it's too close to the property line. I think it's 220 feet. They indicate in their Exhibit 33 they're pursuing an agreement, or a waiver. They say that it'll shift it if they can't get it. So I think that probably, from what I'm reading from the Commission's statements today, that would be included on resolving that issue before. Or am I misreading that?
No, that was my point. I don't understand. The company just doesn't get it, or they just haven't followed what we've done. I mean, they can say all those things, but we cannot make a decision until they finally decide what they want to do. Yes, we may do this. We may do that.
Right.
Well, in previous cases, we've got to a point where there's a turbine that there's an outstanding issue. The company will just say, okay, we want to remove that turbine, and then we can move forward.
Right. And they may do that. I mean, they've indicated
but
that.
But it is on them. This is
right.
The same discussion we had a flipping month ago. There's nothing new today that we've thrown out there. Mm-hmm. They should have made decisions, adjusted it, and then we could move forward. So they've wasted another month of their time because they didn't do something we asked them to last work session. And so if they want to sit around and waste more time, that's up to them. But I'm not going to move forward until they give us a what are the issues that are out? And it's none. These are resolved. This is what we're going to do. Either they have landowner approval or they've taken that out of the project.
So they have to resolve 37 and the collector line that connects
collector
it.
Lines.
And then the collector lines up.
To the north.
81 and 82.
Do they get all those resolved about around turbine 71, 70, 68, and 67? Because those were collector line issues that weren't resolved before.
No, those are issues that need to be resolved as well, as I understand.
And those lines, I mean, those are right in the middle of everything.
They are.
71, 70. Those look like they're on. Oh, through that property.
Right, yeah, through that, the collector lines.
Yeah.
67 to 70 and back and forth, yeah.
Those collector lines and then the collector lines in the northern by 81 and 82. So those are, there's really three big, by those pending, everything going on in those pending landowner areas, that's what needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear as to what the commission is saying here today. Essentially, we need a map that's all green as to where the facilities are going to be placed, whether they be collection lines, turbines, or roadways. That needs to be resolved.
Yeah.
There's a couple other things, too. I don't know if I can bring those up now. Or Commissioner Chris,
no, no.
Said, okay. There is an issue with Receptor 119, which is in the northwest area. It had shadow flicker of 36 hours per year. That landowner has signed a waiver. So that issue is resolved. There's also 119 is just the northwest, not quite the far northwest, but...
okay. They're on board.
They're on board with a waiver that's been executed. Receptor 55, I'm just trying to find that. Where is that on the map here? Right, it's at the southwest side of the project. It's just outside of the green area, R55 near turbine 23 and 24 and 22 there. I asked about the status of that. That particular receptor has 30 hours of shadow flicker in a year. And that landowner recently moved to assisted living. Peak has reached out to his son and informed him about the shadow flicker and that they've expressed a comfort level with the anticipated shadow flicker and that they are likely going to be joining the project. I think we probably need to get something more definitive as to that particular location as well, whether it be a waiver or some type of easement or something from Receptor 55 owner.
Is that still occupied, or was the person in assisted living the only one there?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Be nice if the person just signed, I guess. But what's the amount of hours where they need a waiver?
It's a guideline.
It's a guideline. It's not a requirement, and it's 30 hours, and it's not clear whether it's 30 or more or 30 and under.
So I was thinking it was
30. And, you know, so, I mean, I there isn't anything in our code. There isn't anything in the statute. We've relied apparently on a German study from a number of years ago to set sort of a soft guideline, and we've applied it. So 30 hours, this landowner appears to be satisfied with it. It's questionable whether or not it's 30 or more or 30 or less.
Well, if they are satisfied with it, it would be clear to us if they signed a waiver, and then it's done, clean, done, taken care of. But it's difficult for us to visit with a landowner and said, well, the company said it appeared as if you were fine with it. I mean, it's just it's on our, you know, you could make an argument that our standard is 30 hours if they are opposed to it. So I think we got to get clarification on that from the landowner.
Right. And I don't think, you know, obviously notice was provided to everyone for this project, and I don't believe that this landowner didn't testify for or against as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is issue with potential issue with the soil segregation. They're wanting to do construction work, you know, now essentially, and with removal of topsoil on the turbine locations that they planned construction in 2016. They have presented an exhibit on that, which is, would you have that exhibit number?
Where's that?
I thought that they did.
Yeah, I saw some. I saw.
Kate was in the hearing, I think.
74.
74.
Exhibit, late filed 30.
So they explained what they plan to do to there. I mean, it's up to the commission. I mean, we do have in our provisions a provision for allowing winter construction for this type of situation, and the commission can approve that. So I think it's going to be up to the commission as to whether or not to permit them to proceed with the winter construction, removing the topsoil in the areas to build the footings for the pads.
I'm satisfied with what they described here in their exhibit for winter construction.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that either. I think their bigger issues are getting those easements in place. mm-hmm. The You know, Zach, too, the company, could you remind them that there are many ways to qualify for the production tax credit, too? I mean, it almost brings red flags to me, because if you're a major developer, you can go and purchase the assets of the turbines and not worry about moving some dirt. So there's many different ways to qualify for the PTC.
And we would probably need to be looking at when you build those pads, and you are just doing that a couple years in advance of when you're going to complete the project. What if the project doesn't materialize? How do we assure that those pads are removed? I mean, that's the other issue that we need to be addressing in this order. Somehow, some sort of commitment or financial assurance that the pads that they build will be in that area will be reclaimed if the project doesn't come to fruition.
I think that can be put in the order. I don't know as far as financial assurances as if we have the authority or not to potentially do that, but that's something we can look at.
So what do you have for a draft order? I'm sure the company has submitted one by now. What does their draft order say as it deals with all these little nuances?
In specific?
Well, just as we talk about all these, they may move this over here, they might do this, they might do that. I'm sure the draft order they submitted is if all the easements are in place and everything is fine.
Right. We have a draft order. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm writing an order right now. I have been working on one.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't know what else Julian or Andy want to throw out there, but I'll just throw out there. I'm fine with keep working on the draft order, and if they get all these easements squared away, then we can get a vote. And that's, I guess, where I'm at right now. It's really up to them. You keep plugging away on the draft, and then let us know when all the stuff is in that you think has answered the question, and then we have another work session, or we just put it on the agenda to vote with all the concerns addressed.
I'm trying to phrase this very generically because it'll probably apply to others in the coming months too. We had a work session previously scheduled where I was going to unveil some proposals for new decommissioning guidelines, and so that hasn't even really been done yet. And once they are, and if we're able to reach some kind of consensus, it's a long process till they become final. So this is so far in advance. I don't know what to do about this when we look at someone going out and potentially doing a bunch of earthwork. And were they just going to do the dirt work, or were they going to pour the concrete? I don't think they're even going to pour the concrete this year. Am I correct?
Okay. For some reason, I thought they were doing the concrete as well, but Julie thinks it's the excavation only.
Well, I came away from the hearing understanding concrete.
I thought so, but...
But somewhere in here, and I can't find it now, I thought I read something about just the dirt work and not the concrete, so it seems like that has even been scaled back. But even still, you know, these are big holes, and once the grass is torn up and the topsoil is potentially lost, this is a case where actually are not having a little bit tougher rules on decommissioning is not a benefit for a potential builder. It's a problem for a potential builder because we don't know what to do here. If they go dig these up and a couple years go by, they have no intention of doing anything more for a long time, and it all just sits there. I don't know what we would do about it under our current rules unless we would build into the order some of the new ideas that I'm about to propose. But that's a point of concern for me. And frankly, under our current rules, if they dig a bunch of stuff up and this never comes about, I think it's going to be like some old gravel pits you see sometimes driving down the highway. It's just going to be there, and that's just the end of it.
We're prevented from doing anything sooner than 10 years under our current rules in terms of a financial assurance.
I don't know that the current rules prevent us from building it into the order, but they don't
require
us to build it into the order.
It's been a question I've contemplated a lot over the years, and there's a North Dakota law, which I'm sure you both know better than me about. The PSC cannot do more stringent than like federal rules for pipeline safety or power lines or things like that. So I know we are prevented in law for those things. But I don't know about wind. I think that's one of those that I think that there's a question there. If you did want to put it in order, I don't know how that would play out. So
we can always ask, too.
Yeah. So the question about orderly development, Randy, you kind of queued it up, and I think Julie did, too. I mean, if they do all the things we're asking for, have we met the orderly development threshold, or is there still concerns?
I'm going to tell you that I still have a big, big concern regardless of this other stuff. You know, in their 10-year plan, it's not exclusive that this is for sure a plan to sell this power to one of two companies, but they mentioned two companies in particular, and one of them is XL has already sent out a big press release of their wind plans for the future that clearly is going a different direction. So I don't know where this power is ultimately going to be going, but I feel a responsibility here to, when we talk about orderly development, I think when it comes to the electric industry, we're talking about low cost and reliable power. And the low cost side of that equation, I mean, from the company's perspective, it's all about the electric bills. But it seems to me we also have to keep the taxpayers in mind. And to just glom on to anything where we can get some kind of a tax subsidy, whether we need it or not, whether there's a plan for it or not. In this case, there's no customer. There's no inter-exchange agreement. We don't know how the power is, where the transmission is going. We don't know if a different potential development. At least I hear from landowners and communities that also look forward to big economic development projects that, you know, some companies out there trying to do leasing, they may be counting on the same transmission as Peak is counting on here. And it just seems like it's just such a shotgun approach. Whoever can go out and dig a few holes first and catch up with the federal subsidies is going to do it, and then we'll figure out later how it all comes out. And A, I think the taxpayers lose on it. But B, I don't know what happens to our electric grid then when the taxpayer subsidies disappear and all these things still need to be paid for, and we have heavily subsidized generators competing with less subsidized generators, and some of them have alternative sources of generation for when the wind isn't blowing, and so their costs are a little higher, so they can't compete with the ones who don't have alternative generation sources. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of 2009 and 10 with the stimulus, where all over the country, people were grabbing on and building things and hiring people, whether they needed them or not, because there was stimulus money available. And then a few years later, the stimulus money's gone, and now you have maintenance costs, or you have employees now that maybe you didn't need as bad as it seemed like when the federal taxpayers were paying for them. And it's caused a lot of troubles over the years, too. Later on, at the time, it just seemed like manna from heaven. But I'm not sure that this meets orderly development when there's no customer, no inter-exchange agreement, and scrambling to even get easements after 6 or 8 years.
Okay, so let me explore that line in the 10 minutes we have with Zach. So let's say we prepare an order that says we reject this wind farm because it does not meet the criteria of orderly development. Can we build an order that rejects it based on that, based on what Randy talked about? I mean, it's. I'd like to discuss it
well,
all.
I just before you go there, I think that I appreciate Randy's frustrations and share a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot, especially as it relates to the outstanding issues we've already talked about. But we'd be making a marked change from what the commission has done in the past on wind approvals, because we have a long list of projects that we've approved that haven't come to fruition. But that wasn't the commission's focus on whether it was going to, you know, ready for the market and to be purchased and connected. Our focus had been, does it meet the requirements to receive a permit? And that isn't one of the requirements. And now we would be saying it is a requirement under the orderly development arena of our jurisdiction that you have an exchange, you have a purchase power agreement and a connection agreement. Those would be basically new requirements that we'd be adding to what we've done in the past. And this does evolve. So I'm not saying that's not appropriate. It's just I'm not there yet because I don't know how much hardship those projects have created. Like, I haven't heard lots of stories about the fact that those projects have been out there and haven't come to fruition, that's been a big problem. Maybe it has, and we just haven't heard about it, but I'd want to know more about that. And also, this is just a really evolving industry, the electricity industry. None of us know where it's going to go in 10 years. One thing we know for sure, it isn't going to be the same as it is today. And it's going to be vastly different. There are so much happening in battery development and just all the new technologies. My gosh, we might not even use a grid in 10 years. I mean, 20 years. It might not. It seems impossible today, but this seemed impossible 10 years ago. So I'm not. I think that we have to be conscious of the fact that we're dealing with new technologies and constantly changing technologies, and we need to be flexible too and help the industries, you know, give them some flexibility to bring the stuff on board, adapt to it, and incorporate it into their operating systems. So I'm not where Randy is right now, ready to say we have to add the transmission agreement and a power purchase agreement to our criteria in order to approve it under the charge of orderly development for siting.
Sure. Well, I think that, you know, my thoughts have been on the interconnection. I never would hold an interconnection. I think the interconnection is such a fluid process, and I know that the way that lays out, as long as, to me, they've filed for interconnection, that's fine, because the interconnection process takes years. And as far as having power purchase agreements, we regulate the utilities, and we have some of the utilities that we have them come in front of us before they do things. So I don't think that would ever work. But I do think somewhere in the middle, if someone was to reject something in orderly development, I think if they do all the criteria they're supposed to, they've done orderly development. If they've done all the fish and wildlife stuff, the North Dakota Game and Fish, all of our county stuff, I think if they've done all that, I think they meet the orderly development criteria. But I think the question in this one is that we still have not met that threshold yet, is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. But to Randy's point, though, I mean, what would you have to show to show it wasn't orderly development? I mean, how would you do that? It's in law, but I don't know if it's ever happened.
Well, I think if the commission were to decide that there was not orderly developed, we would craft an order that would support that.
And you'd tell them why, and if they corrected that issue, then it would be.
Well, I think no. I think that the decision would have been made, because the vote would be whatever it would be to reject the project. There would have to be a reapplication.
Well,
there would be opportunity, I suppose, for reconsideration.
What I'm thinking is, this is out loud, is if we get to a point where it's a 2-1 vote and one of our colleagues wants to vote no one on it because of orderly development, that's their right. But it'd be nice to have a dissent paper as to why you think that in the record. I mean, that's why there's three of us, because we don't always vote the same. But I know that sometimes I've had colleagues, not necessarily with the two sitting right here, that have voted no on something, and they don't give me a good reason why. Just, I vote no. Okay, well, why? And then there can be a – and we've had cases that we've gone to the Supreme Court where you two were proved right and I was proved wrong. But the point was he had a dissent paper that it went all the way to the court, and it the law was decided. So if we get to this question of orderly development, it would be nice if someone, if you do go that way, then write up why, and if someone, that becomes a basis of the beginning of a new whole new era, like you said, Jules. So, but are we okay with, keep plowing forward with the order? You've heard the concerns, and then you've heard Randy's concerns, I think, too, and I think that we share a lot of the same, and we'll just, it's all back to the company's hands right now, from my viewpoint. And if as soon as you get that stuff, Zach, let's get that order out there, and if we want a work session on it, we'll schedule it. If we don't, then we'll move forward, if that sounds okay with you guys.
Works for me.
Randy?
Well, I think regardless of what the ultimate decision is, the goal initially always has to be to craft the best plan possible, you know, with the assumption that things pass or are approved. And so, yeah, I think the things we talked about earlier, although I still don't know what I want to do about the whole thing, I mean, I certainly want to see us get to the point where we have the LDS stuff straightened out, the easement thing straightened out, the all the other things we've talked about this morning, and then look at it and decide whether it should be approved or not approved. But we first have to craft the best possible proposal.
So there's a tweak on the lighting system just in terms of the follow-ups that we're going to ask the company to provide. There's the easement issues that need to be addressed, and then there's the, you guys are going to explore what kind of additional requirements we might be able to include for reclamation in the case that the project does not come to fruition, reclaiming the initial construction.
I think to that, I was just thinking about that. If they're asking for a special consideration for us in the order on soil segregation, if we agree on that, then they need to agree on the special conditions for how to remediate it back if it doesn't go through. I think that's a good balance. So tie it to that.
Yeah, they want the special consideration for the winter construction, I think.
Sure, we're happy to do that if you agree to this.
Yeah, makes sense. I like that approach. So,
I have nothing else, Madam Chair.
Tied together. Anything else, Randy?
I do not.
Okay, that was a good discussion, and it is just about 9 o'clock. This work session is adjourned.